The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 263 for Wednesday, March 2nd, 2011. My name is Jules Cisek, and I'm in California with Jim Race. How's it going?
It's going well, Jules. How are you?
I'm great, because the season started. The racing season started.
Indeed. And it was a great first weekend to start. I'm very stoked. We'll talk about that a bit shortly. I'm very, very pumped. And, you know, once March starts, it's cool because everything is underway now. It's like tick, 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 you know, stuff just coming up. And it's that time of year where we end up getting very little sleep, isn't it?
Yep, exactly.
We don't have any interviews for you this week. We have some great ones in the pipeline. I'm sure you guys will enjoy next week's show. I certainly am looking forward to it. In the meantime, we did get a really cool listener email today from a gentleman named Patrick Lehman. I'm going to say Lehman, like Lehman Brothers, perhaps. And it was kind of timely, and we responded to it late this afternoon, just before we're recording this show. And Patrick said, I have a question I would like your opinion about. Now, this question is purely rumor and speculation. We love those ones, don't we, Jules? But interesting nonetheless. Ducati's performance at Sepang was dismal, to say the least. Do you think Ducati has removed the vast majority of their research and development resources for this year's 800cc bike? Do you think it is possible that they decided to forego any kind of reasonable championship run this year in an effort to focus almost 100% on developing the 1,000cc bike for next year? Look at what has happened so far. They have pulled out a World Superbike. They are currently showing terrible performance in the last year of the 800 class, and they hired two World Champion GP riders to prefer the 1,000cc class to the 800s.
So before you go into your answer, this is a great email because... Well, and thanks for sending it in, Patrick. But it's also very there's a lot of people that are saying similar kind of things. Like, you know, is the poor performance in Sepang a sign that Ducati is preparing for 20? But they're sinking everything into 2012 when the formula changes and they can come back out on top. I've heard this a bunch of times.
Yeah, no doubt, and I think there's good reasons for people to wonder about that. And Patrick's point of, saying they pulled out a World Superbike is another one that kind of can make people go, to paraphrase what I said, and if you want me to roll into that, Jules.
Go for it.
Okay. I said to Patrick an email, I said, I think you're falling to what I call the testing trap. And what we have to look at.
We all do, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no doubt that we do. And everybody does. The trick is to hold yourself out of that until essentially what we get is the first race of the year. And I think we got some very interesting results out of that this past weekend when we had a lot of speculation prior to the first World Superbike race. But if we look, first off, we don't have any races in MotoGP. The world superbike pullout, I should point out, they certainly did remove the factory class from the grid. But as we saw this last weekend, a Ducati did finish first in both races with Juan Carlos Checa at the helm. Damn it. I went and gave that away, didn't I? and there's no doubt that there are some factory type parts on that bike. In fact, the second team,
even before the racing started, even before the testing for Superbike started, there was Paddock talked about some course of support going to his team.
Sure. And then the Effenbach team with Smertz and Guintoli are on last year's factory Corsa Xerox bikes, which are obviously no slouches, and they certainly had a good run, both in qualifying and to some degree in the race, although I had a letdown there. We'll talk about that in a bit. But at the same time, there's no doubt that Ducati is not going to be ceding, giving up the opportunity to run at the top of the grid just to send everybody back to Bologna to work on the bike. And you don't pay somebody like Valentino Rossi or Nicky Hayden these rather large amounts of money to run a year, and especially the last year of the 800s, where they certainly want to have a good showing and not just hand the thing to a company like, say, Honda, who desperately are fighting to do it and are certainly putting to get forth a great effort. This is a company with pride. They revolve around racing, and I think that we kind of have to hold some of this within and wait and see what happens. If we get halfway through the season and it's clear that they've folded, maybe we'd have a different discussion. But I think at this point of the season, and the season which hasn't even really started yet, we still have one more test plus the first race to run. We don't really know anything yet.
Yeah, and you know, a year is a long time to just shelve a project.
Sure.
Plus, technology is going to change in this 1 year. I mean, you think about how much the bikes are changing every year. It's not like they're sinking this any development into the 800 into a dead end. You know, the only thing that is going to be gone is that exact engine configuration. You know.
Well, and on top of that, the 1,000cc rules aren't really written yet.
Right.
So you really can't. Well, you can come up with 5-6 different engine configurations all revolving around some 81cc or 81mm cylinder bore, but you still need to focus on what's happening now. So the bottom line is, you know, we look at teams like Suzuki last couple of years that were doing great in testing, and testing doesn't tell you everything. So I guess my bottom line is, and I hope everybody out there kind of takes this to heart, although I know it's something that's difficult to implore when everybody has their favorites, is wait and see. You know, even the first race doesn't tell a whole lot until we get back onto the European soil. So I give you that. Right. But thank you for the email, Patrick. I think it was very cool. It got me thinking, and maybe it'll get everybody out there thinking. And if you have thoughts about that, feel free to send them in to us. Correct any mistakes or throw anything back in our face you think we might want to hear or not hear. Cool. What else we've got going on? Run through this bit, Jules. I think it's pretty fun.
Well, we have our first round of our fantasy team. How many teams do we have now? Like 5,000 or something?
I think we've got 160 plus in the MCN Fantasy League for the MotoPod Listener League within.
Right. So, we decided that we're going to, whenever the results are updated, we'll post the top five. We'll mention the top five people and their teams. So we got a tie for first place. Obviously, these guys picked Checa and Biaggi. Vittorio Toby Leo, Ratsars.
Ratsars.
That's the team name.
Yep.
Not the guy's name. Okay. Niels Baker from Team Baker Racing. Yannick Boucher from Yan 929. Anthony Hall from Punk Jumper. Those guys are tied for first. Then in fifth is Andy Ramirez with Radar Racing.
Very cool. Your top guys that are actually tied for first in our league, and in fact, tied for first overall in the MCN Fantasy League, of which there are about 1,000 people that are tied for first.
Yeah.
and that goes back to the thing that there's only one race that's gone down so far. For your hosts, Martin and Jules are actually tied for 20th within our league. I think it's pretty cool. You guys are tied for 20th, and I'm currently tied for 143rd in our league.
Let me guess, you had Guintoli.
I had Guintoli, and I switched Guintoli for Checa so I could get a little more strength in BSB at the last minute.
Mm. Huh. Ouch.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and then
that's too bad.
So only one race in, we've got a whole lot of other races left.
I just want to say Vittorio, Niels, Yannick, and Anthony, it's gonna cost you in BSB.
It will. Yeah. Yeah, the thing is all about balance, and maybe just before the first change window, I'll give you guys some of that data, those of you that might be having some trouble with it, to give you an idea. I've given some of it away before, but I'll give it away again, but not before it starts.
Not before you're above 100?
Yeah, I might wait.
Yeah, but it's fun to see how big that league is, because it's going to be amazing to play.
It is. I'm astounded. I think it's definitely one of the bigger leagues, probably maybe in the top five of that whole deal. So cool. Thanks a whole bunch for you guys for coming in. And still, it is pin number 1477. We'll have the information for that in the show notes. You are most welcome to join in. If you are participating in another team somewhere, you can still join in with us. Those points, I believe, will count.
Yeah.
So if you are just starting out and you missed the first race, feel free to join in and you guys can catch up, and you might be able to beat me by the second race. Anyway, let's talk about what we had going on this weekend, Jules. We had some fantastic racing down in Phillip Island, something we've been anticipating for quite some time. You know, we had the testing in the week prior, and that gave us a good indication. You know, it was clear during that testing, and, you know, the talk with Braxy last week, which was fun. I had a great time with that, even though it was a little bit raw, was that the Ducatis were looking like they were pretty strong, and that seemed to follow through.
Yeah, well, the Ducatis have always been very strong in superbikes,
sure,
in Phillip Island, so that's not a huge surprise. But actually, I was not as surprised at all about the top two finishers.
Right.
This weekend, yep. You know, it was the battles further down that were really amazing. But in general, like let's go over Super Bowl. So Super Bowl, for those of you who've not followed superbikes before, is a three-part elimination where you start with the full field, and then they keep the top 16 riders after what is it, 15 minutes?
Yeah, I believe it's 12, and then there's a 7-minute gap, and then another 12 minutes, and then
another.
Yeah. And the cool thing about it is that I actually think it's pretty cool is during that period of time for those three different sessions, when you go into Super Bowl 1, 2, 3, because you drop six guys off going in, is that you only get a total of three qualifying tires. You get two rears and one front, and you have to be very judicial about where you use those. And some guys will use them early, you know, just trying to make it into the show, or at least make it into the final one. And some guys, you know, will hang on to them. And I saw last year, I think it was, there was at least one or two guys that actually came out of Super Bowl qualified very well and still had qualies left. Now, the qualifier tires, it's a bit of a misnomer. They're not quite like the one lap wonders that we used to have in the days of like GP or one and a half laps. They'll do about three or four. And so it kind of gives them an opportunity, and it's a real chess match if you think about it, when you watch these things go on, especially if the weather's acting up. But we did have great weather for Super Bowl.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, we had great weather the whole weekend. It was looking like it might turn bad, but it wasn't bad except for a little bit of, I guess, wind. But that's always the case.
The only thing we did have wet on Sunday morning for warm-up.
Oh, for warm-up. Which, that's true. That's true. We actually did play up a part.
Yeah. But let's walk down through we'll walk down through it. I'll run through it quickly for you. Carlos, and this is top to bottom. Carlos Checa, Biaggi, Guintoli, Haslam on your front row. Gene Laverty, Smertz, Corser, and Melandri. And those were all your guys that made it through into Super Bowl One. Your next four were Fabrizio, Sykes, Waters, and Ray. Waters, of note, because this is a one-off for him on the Yoshimura Suzuki. Next up was Johan Lascores, Noriyuki Haga, James Toselin, and Ruben Chaus. Moving further down the field and filling out were Leon Camier, I believe it was Brian Staring, Berger, Badovini, Rolfo, and Aitchison. So, and I think there were actually maybe even a couple more guys. I think it's only 22 total that Yeah, I don't trust me on that. I may be talking out my. Anyway, it was really fun to watch Super Bowl once again. I kind of had forgotten what the thrill of it was like, and one of those situations where I used any means to do so, and I had a great time. It was neat because the entire thing for us, unusually so, it's one of few opportunities, Jules, we have to be able to actually catch the racing during prime time for us, right?
Except for the fact that no one's actually broadcasting it. But aside from that, it's great.
You know, even for live timing and scoring is not so bad.
It's not.
Yeah, it's not the best thing in the world, but it was pretty cool. And so I thought that was a great setup, and it certainly did bode well for Sunday. There were a couple of things to talk about. Leon Kamier was injured, and there were a couple of guys that had been kind of hurting from crashes.
I think Ray had a small issue or 10.
Well, yeah, that too. He broke his ring finger on his left hand, potential injury to his wrist, and that was from his bike essentially catching on fire. He lost an oil line going into turn three and had to dive off the thing and tumbled all the way through the kitty litter, and the bike collected itself really well against the tire wall. And thank you for reminding me of that. And the fact that he actually pulled himself back together and had a good showing on the weekend was pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
Yep. Morning warm-up, as we mentioned on Sunday, was damp. They still managed, some of the guys, to be able to get their act together and get some good information from that. And then we had the first race of the day, and it was a good race, and it was an exciting race, and it kind of gave you that first idea of how things were going to flesh out. And there were some real surprises at the front, I thought, besides the guys that we kind of knew were going to be at the front.
Right. We expected Checa to do extremely well. But the first person to lead at the first corner of this 2011 season was not Checa or any of the guys we expected. It was Eugene Laverty.
Indeed. In fact, the first lap as well.
Yeah. Not quite.
Oh, that's right. He got pipped to the line, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Still, it was very cool to see him up there. And considering he'd qualified fifth, but he does have the will to get good starts when he needs to. And I was pumped.
That's good to see.
Mm-hmm. Several laps in, and I don't have the lap chart here, and my memory might be fading a bit, but we did lose our first guy, and that would have been Sylvain Guintoli, and he did crash out 16 laps from the end, and that was a shame, not only for him, but for my fantasy league.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I was totally wrong about Laverty led the first two laps.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right.
See what our memories do? This is the effect of us going back to work to our regular jobs and trying to remember back late night races. I'm trying to think of what else was super notable there. Haga certainly did charge back up from a pretty poor start, and I was impressed with that. There was no doubt that Melangi was looking strong in that. Fabrizio actually was up near the front as well for a while. Johnny Ray had gotten up near the front, but actually, I believe he had an off-track.
He ran off.
Yeah, off-track excursion and got kind of pushed back towards the back. Tozen at one time.
He came back all the way back in 17th and made it back to 12th, so not bad again.
Indeed.
See those bikes. I mean, I think we've probably talked that to death, but seeing the Castro Hondas was awesome.
Oh, no doubt. And actually, I should shoot you some of the photos that I got from that from the team, because they're lovely.
I bet. I think the surprise of this race was Haslam, because, you know, how many podiums does BMW have in Superbikes? This is their fourth year, right? They probably have about, you know, they have less than 10, I'm sure.
I think so. And in fact, going into this weekend, there was some question about the cohesiveness of the team and some wondering about if they could pull things together. But I think Leon really pulled it together for the team, if you know what I mean.
Well, so he beat his teammate who's been riding this, the BMW, for two seasons or three seasons already. In both races, Corser. So I just keep continue being really impressed with Haslam. Like, I think last year he was on a suboptimal machine and almost won the championship at one point. He looked like he could have won it, and it just shows what a good rider he is.
There's no doubt. It's one of those things, much like Rossi, where the testing may not look that great, the qualifying may not be perfect, but when it comes down to race time, he's going to give it everything he's got, and certainly managed to come to the fore and push hard. And if there was anything that team could really use to help them pull together as a team, it was a podium in the first race.
Yeah, great. I know we love James Whittam, but I really got tired of him bitching about the Aprilia. This is the third season now where they can't say, wow, what a, you know, like Biaggi's really riding this thing well. It's always on the straight, look at that Aprilia go, and then quiet. But the guy is riding really well. He's a freaking champion. He's wearing the number one plate. They can't even, you know, say anything about the cams anymore. Everything's legit, and the bike's fast. Too bad. This is not a racer's race. It's everybody, the teams.
The bottom line is the bike is homologated now, and it's in the same, you know, stock-ish kit that everybody else has, and there's no real super special parts that we know of. I agree.
I want to hear the commentator say something like, you know, like Biaggi's name, you know, instead of just look at that Aprilia go.
I actually the first time I really heard the commentary well on it was not Jack and James, but it was Jonathan Green and Steve Martin. So, and I think they actually had some praise, faint as it may be.
I know it's hard to, you know, get too excited about Max Biaggi for some of these guys, especially the racers who have, you know, dealt with his personality. But you know, it's a little tiresome.
Max is a charmer these days.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you know, I did love some of the commentary about Fabian Foray, but we'll get to that in a bit. Okay. Let's just run down through some of the grid for you, and at least the top 10, and we can chat about people beyond that as well. Of course, winning the first race and doing it in rather commanding fashion was Carlos Checa. Max Biaggi
pulled
right
a massive,
there.
Massive, massive wheelie at the end, too. It was amazing.
He did. Well,
so cool.
And a significant gap. He had nearly a 4.5 second gap, and
that's after the wheelie.
Yeah, no doubt. Into the headwind, going down the Gardiner Strait at Phillip Island as well, and putting yourself up as an even broader target for the seagulls down there is a pretty brave act. 4.5 seconds back was Max Biaggi. And, you know, he was comfortable, and he sort of rode it out. And I do have to give some props to the people that were running the cameras down there. They did the one thing that I really enjoy is they spent most of their time when there was a significant gap at the front focusing on the battles behind. So good on you guys.
We actually didn't really see Checa until he was, you know, for like 10 laps until he was crossing the line, which, you know, I could see that some of the sponsors being like, hello, you know, we want our money's worth kind of thing. But I actually think that they get more visibility when the race, everybody's really glued to the TV or computer because they're showing really exciting racing, and then they show, you know, Checa crossing the finish line, doing a wheelie, you know, talking about afterwards, being on the podium, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think they did a fantastic job directing, actually. All three races were really well directed.
Yeah. The Yeah, your point is well taken. I mean, if you're following the lead guy for a couple of laps, it's an excellent opportunity for somebody to get up and, you know, grab a beer, do the business. And so, yeah, it is great when they kind of move around. The one thing I did miss, which I thought we were going to get or was hoping we were going to get, was onboard cameras. But perhaps they're going to save that for when they're back on the European continent and the logistics are easier to take care of.
Yeah, I always feel like the first race at the World Superbike is like rushed so that they can get going before MotoGP, because then they take a long break. You know, like it's the longest break of the season.
Well, that's true, but their first race is only a week after the GP race in 3 weeks. So yeah, it's a month.
Yeah, it's a long break.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right. It is true. Perhaps that's why Phillip Island wants them to change this race. So let me continue down through the grid. Your top three, of course, on the box were Checo, Biaggi, and Leon Haslam. And tip of the hat and a tip of the champagne bottle to all three of them. Tight behind that, and actually
incredibly very tight.
Incredibly tight battle between Eugene Laverty and Marco Melandri, and that was fantastic seeing. And I think I've said as we've gone along through testing, those two seem to be pushing each other, and very, very cool to see. Not far behind was Michel Fabrizio, and then things kind of thinned down a bit, down to Jakob Smerts, who a very creditable seventh. Not just a excellent super pole person, but in this case actually backed it up with a seventh spot. Tom Sykes, the first of the Cowies, and the first up there of the Cowies, because the rest of them were rather far behind, including Johan Lescors, who was out with nine laps to go, I believe. And then moving on down, so we had Sykes, we had Nori Haga, who was about 2 seconds behind him, Troy Corser, and that's down to 10th. 11th place was Roberto Ralfo on the next Kawasaki. Considering he had a very bad qualifying effort, I think that's a pretty good finish. Followed by Johnny Ray, Leon Camier, Badovini, Sterling, Chaus, Toslin, Waters, Aitchison, Berger, and the rest of the wrecking crew. All in all, I think it was a great way to start the season.
Yeah.
One of the things I will note that perhaps, and I have to point this out because it's a fact, is that when you're looking at that Aprilia go down the front straight, we should note that its missile-like speed was running at 320, 317, extremely fast and massively impressive, and especially because you are usually facing a little bit of a headwind going down through that turn. So, and in fact, the corner speeds, dude, that people were carrying through one, especially the Yamahas.
God, Melandri's line was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was insane.
That was much more noticeable in the second race, actually, because they showed him a lot more. But yeah, we'll get to that.
And there's no doubt that one of the things that I did notice was that Biaggi was carrying so much speed, it was on occasion he would actually run wide going into one, but he was always able to actually pull it back. But there were some very different lines being taken through one, and the line into two is very exacting. If you don't nail that, you're going to be running into some issues.
We'll have to talk about Super Sport, because those guys don't care.
It's the axe murderer class. Welcome back. Yeah. Do you want to do Super Sport next or go to race two?
We'll do let's do race two here because there's a lot more to talk about in Super Sports, I think.
Okay, cool. Well, you run us through here, and I'll do the commentary.
Okay. Well, so Superbike race two. Yeah, check out again. You know, walked away with it. The gap at the end didn't seem as great, but that's he really turned it down the last bunch of laps. So he finished only a second ahead of the second place guy, which is Biaggi. But the real surprise in this race was Melandri. Right from the get go, he had a good start and made his way up there, and then him and Biaggi just were cutting it up for probably a good 7-8 laps. Really, really excellent racing, you know, switching back and forth. When we were talking about the different lines, this race was when it really became apparent, especially because Biaggi would go really deep into one And Melange would try to cut inside to set him up. Actually, no, Melange was also going pretty deep because he was going really wide entering into two. And then trying to get on the inside of Biagi. A couple times that worked, a couple times it didn't. We had, you know, passing in the bottom of the, of course, Luki Heights going into MZ corner. So it was really good old school, you know, two MotoGP guys now in superbikes, retiring in superbikes, and cutting it up. Great. Fantastic. All the way to the end.
The chatter that was going on Twitter, because there was a whole bunch of people on there watching the race at the same time, turned to, while that particular battle was going on, turned to somehow pulled back, and there were a couple of us, myself and Dennis Noyes, the post-race at Germany, I think it was, back in the day, and when those two ended up in a bit of a sparring match bash-up during a qualifying run, and Max's uncle went and tried to throttle Marco when he got back to the pit. Do you remember that?
Oh,
tried
yeah.
Tried to joke him out. And I don't know why the conversation ended up in that realm, but it was because these two guys were battling, that was that term, hammer and tongs, but brutally. And it was a good fight. And,
it was very clean. You know, it was very clean.
It was clean, but it was hardcore. You know, I'm taking your line. They weren't bouncing off each other. It was just, okay, you're there, then I have to yield. Okay, you're there now, and I've got to yield. And this was at laser high speed. So it was really fun to watch. And really, those two were kind of the pride of the show, back a little bit ways, who were having a good battle as well. In fact, we had a three-way battle of the Brits, were Johnny Ray, Leon Haslam, Kamir. There was a lot going on in this race in these tight little groups. It really was a series of groups that had broken off.
Yeah. I mean, we did have in both races, we had a group fighting for third, but you know, by half distance, it was people were starting to drop off. Haga made a really good run in all the way up to, I don't know if he hit third, but he was definitely fourth at one point. And then he made a slight mistake about two laps from the end. And Kamir, actually, I think I passed like four or five guys on the last lap.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And very, very impressed for, well, I think what he was trying to do there was get back up to the, you know, the Brit boys have rivalry like nobody.
Yeah. Right.
It's all about, you know, smack talking post-race. You know, I can't remember the last time. You might have to go way, way back, that you get a bunch of Brits racing in a series, and for the most part, they'll try and kill each other on the track in a very good-natured sort of, not fatal sort of way. And then they'll get off and they'll be all cutting it up afterwards. It's very cool to watch. I love that. Probably hoping that Tom could get up there with him. But your rundown was from the 4th through 10th was Johnny Ray, Leon Haslam, Kamir, Haga, Fabrizio, another good run. Tom Sykes also doing well. And again, the Kawis, that's a good run. He was only 18 seconds back. Does that sound like a lot? No, not really over 22 laps. And certainly,
more importantly, he was, you know, in position to battle for like fifth place.
And even maybe more importantly, in front of the second Castrol Honda. Although I do have to give props to Ruben, because I don't think he destroyed many bikes this weekend. And in fact, I can't even think of during the entire testing period that we saw that there was a whole lot of. I think he's been real solid. And if his focus is to ride solid, keep the bike together. What he may be trying to do to some extent is to advance slowly rather than to rocket to the front and wish for the best. So we will have to see. Another person right behind him with a four-letter name with many unfamiliar consonants is Jakob Smerts, followed by Rolfo once again. Out of this race, which was a real drag, was Badovini first, of course, but Johan Lescours, very, very promising guy on the other Kawasaki, out both races. Not a great start to the season. Understatement of of the weekend. Speeds in this were even more respectable than the first race. We had some guys going super fast. Of course, Biaggi, as we well expected, but right up there as well was Castrol Honda of Jonathan Rea and the Ducati of Jakob Smerts at 314. These guys are smoking. Oh, well, Johan Lescours at 315 up until eight laps to go. So really, these guys were flying. And you got to remember the qualifying speed for... And
don't forget, Laverty had another great race, but this time he went off... He went wide, I think, in one, actually. No, not in one, because that's not recoverable.
I want to say it was at the exit of... At the bottom of Lukey Heights. He got probably pushed wide there.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Wherever it was, he had a long way to go to get back on track. And
then a Corser went off in Honda, and that killed his race.
You get pushed wide here on the grass, and especially the dampish grass, even this time of year, especially with the air coming in off the ocean at PI, and you're in trouble. Yeah. You're in big trouble. You want to be able to make sure you can get back on course first. And the speeds on some of these corners are so high that you end up back in 15th, 17th, 18th. And I think you rejoined the grid in 18th and still managed to come back and scavenge 1 point out of it. So, hey, apparently what happened during that race, my understanding is they had some problems with the electronics, and he ended up running into three false neutrals for the race. And that will spoil your day. If you ever had a false neutral, and I'm sure you've had a few, Jules, and especially under race conditions, you try and go from fourth to third or third to second, and you hit something expecting that engine braking, and it doesn't come, it's not fun. The amount of options you have, especially in the timing that's involved to try and turn into the corner, are very limited. So I'm sure they'll get that sorted. No doubt that the Yamaha Italia team has the capability of doing so. They just need to figure out what's going on. And once again, Landry on the box and a fantastic result. You know, there were a lot of us going into the season going, wow, okay, Marco's had a tough couple of years, and can he do it? Can he elevate himself? And I think he certainly proved that this weekend.
I do have to say though, I mean, as much as I totally agree that it was great to see, and that it does bode well, it is PI, and it's one of the tracks that he loves and he does well at. So, we'll see. He's definitely a guy who has some hot tracks and cold tracks.
That's true.
And they really make a difference for him.
Well, I think we'll have to see what happens with the melding of his skills with the superbike, the tracks he's not comfortable with, because everything changes. Yep. It really is a huge difference. So that was your race one and race two. I just want to check my notes here real quick, because I think I jotted a couple of things down. Hold on for a moment. No. So cut that. I was trying to figure out if there was anything extra. Let's talk about World Supersport, because that's my absolute favorite goo goo gaga class, right? And that's a technical term, by the way. We had the testing obviously going into this, and there were a lot of people that were sort of wondering how that was going to work out for the Supersport grid. We had some guys that we were pretty sure were going to be up front, and we were wondering about some others, maybe most notably the Yamahas, because going into testing, it seemed like they might have been struggling a little bit. But, you've got two good guys on there. But then again, you've got the bikes that are, in theory, 2 years old. In fact, 2 years ago, they carried a gentleman to the Supersport World Championship by the name of Cal Crutchlow, who's now in MotoGP. So you knew they were good kit and they'd had some upgrades, but let's pop in and get a little bit of an idea on what happened in qualifying. Click, click, click. I was chatting and I wasn't prepped. All right. So the way that we pull this together is your second time practice. It gives you an idea of how they were set up and how they were going. And there were some real surprises in this. We knew last year that the Kawasaki's were quick. Okay. And the one thing that kind of pushed us away from thinking about that so much was the fact that Johan the Scores went out with three or four races to go in the year. And he really was their star. They brought in Brock Parks, and Brock Parks did really well to fill out the season. Enough so that they brought him back this year with David Salome, who was running European Superstock. I want to say 1,000, might have been 600, and somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. They didn't correct me from last week, so maybe when I said in World Endurance Championship, I was correct then. How's that for a wander about?
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore.
Okay,
we're talking about World Super Sport, right?
World Super Sport. And kind of wandering around qualifying. You're just trying to give some background. where were we? Okay, so we knew Kawasaki's would be quick if they did what they did last year and the team pulled it together. We had some question marks, perhaps, with the Hansgrohe Tenkata Honda team, although you know that they're always going to put out a good 600, and they brought back a former championship for them in one Fabian Foray. And he was champion in 2002, 2003, so it had been a long time. His partner was one Florian Marino, who I believe was actually the European Superstock guy, and we were kind of wondering about that. We had the Yamaha team with Lucas Gasa and Chaz Davis. Then we had the four-person team that were ostensibly all Park Algar, however, two separate teams, and then an entire raft of other teams behind them, including one, Robin Harms, once again back with the red helmet looking for damage. First, you kind of think a small field, but then again, the away races, especially for the super sport teams, they don't always hit that. As James said, and you might have caught it in the telecast, they're either not ready or they just simply don't have the funds to start off at the first round. So let's talk about qualifying, because it was pretty straightforward. Almost all of the fastest times were set in the second session, with the exception of Fabien Foray. Your top four on the grid were David Salome, Foray, Sam Lowes of Park Algar, Brock Parks, that's your first row, Lucas Gasa, Roberto Tamburini, Florian Marino, Chaz Davis. And it is Davis, people.
Really?
Yes, it is Davis. Although these days he will accept anything, apparently. Your third row, Robin Arms, Gino Ray, James Ellison, who was recovering from arthroscopic surgery with four holes in his knee that he had performed Wednesday and managed to actually qualify pretty well on Saturday. Rockley and Delomo, moving on down, Schopek, that's Schopek. Your man.
Schopek.
Ivanov Quarmby, and then on down through the grid. And it was a pretty straightforward qualifying. It's one thing we certainly don't get to see. I don't think you get to see it in UK or anywhere unless you are at the circuit or watching it over a closed circuit over some super secret satellite system. We didn't get to see it, but I certainly watched the timing and scoring, and it was relatively close and quite quick, to be honest. It looked like it was certainly and a whole bunch of laps these guys were running as well, so I was quite pumped for Super Sport. And as we well know, Super Sport comes between Superbike Race 1 and Race 2. And it's kind of, well, here in the States, we don't get it on TV until Tuesday. So once again, I had to watch it on timing and scoring and other means. But it really was a dogfight, wasn't it, Jules? Right from the get-go.
It never let up.
It didn't. You walk me through the first part. Let's bounce off.
I don't remember
each other.
Much of the first part. I just remember sitting on the edge of my seat, you know, and going, okay, who's in the lead now?
Okay, let me see if I can pull out significant events. It was a great start and certainly a scramble for the first two corners, because it's really the first two corners at Phillip Island that matter. And those two corners basically lay out the rest of the track. And you have to make it through both of them, obviously. But turn one, where you end up going into, sets you up for turn two. And it's key where you end up, especially from the start, because everybody's kind of getting up to speed. It's a standing start, but it's amazing how fast it can actually pull off from a standing start and pull off these 135 laps. You know, it's like I have no idea how they do that. And I was a good starter and not even anywhere near this league, of course. But the first thing that I remember was going through Honda Corner, and it was maybe six people back, and it was kind of the suspects you might imagine, the guys from the first few rows, but then also Lucas Scassa up there. And Lucas Scassa almost crashed twice in Honda Corner. He lost the front, and then and Lucas Scassa is a big guy, so when you see something happen on the bike, and he's got a whole passel of people right behind him, he lost the front a little bit, caught it, and then got on the gas too much and started losing the rear. So it was a weird little triple wiggle, and over the space of probably about a 15-foot turning radius, and I'm like, dude, you almost crashed twice. And that figures interestingly into the story later when we walk through the results, because I was just, I was kind of astounded. And it was amazing to me in a way. And your point is actually very well taken, Jules, because I'm thinking to myself and I'm like, how can I pull like little significant events out of that? And I even rewatched it last night. And I'm like, I want to like ingrain this in my mind. And all I can think about is this mishmash. Okay, one of the things that does absolutely stick in my mind is we knew that Sam Lowes was running well, and we had an idea that was going to happen before the race. The one thing that was clear was he was obviously very fast in the quick sections. But the thing that was kind of holding him back for the longest time was his braking into the slower sections, especially, for example, the bottom of Lukey Heights, which is a classic passing zone, right? You rail over there, you get a little bit of a run. The guy that you're trying to pass sets up wide and you go inside and it's a block pass. And it seemed like when he was going down the hill, he could never quite get the bike settled enough to be brave enough to put it in front of somebody. And obviously, one of the things he's trying to do, at least in that point of the race, is not collect anybody because he wants to finish his first race or his first official race instead of a wild card. And you don't want to collect anybody. First race of the season, as in essence, what is a rookie. But that isn't to say that he and several other people weren't willing to put the bike where they wanted it, as opposed to where other people wanted them to be. And there was an awful lot of line taking in this race, but I didn't see, with the exception perhaps Lowe's last pass where he kind of used his foot to push off, it wasn't an argy bargy fender bashing race as much as I am here, this is my spot, get the fuck out of my way. And I think that was what impressed me the most. You know, the guys that we had go out the race, and that's a really notable thing that we'll talk about shortly, but I'll mention the names first, and then we'll talk about some of the whys, were Perota, Ray, Skopek, Praia, Rockley, Skopek.
Just pretend the Z is an H, and you'll be
okay.
Fine.
Foray, and then one person that isn't named but went out of the race and then made it back in was Chaz Davis. So he did not DNF. He just finished way back.
We'll talk about that as well.
But the end of the race was basically for me a bit epic. And you know, the nice thing about Super Sport, although it hasn't been that way so much the last couple of years, because the battle prior to that was really with two to three guys, and it was the same way. It was almost two guys last year. It really was two guys last year for the last half of the race once we lost the scores, that being Laverty and Safuaglu. And the prior year was Safuaglu, Laverty, and Crutchlow, and occasionally Foray when he came up and got pissed off and was French. There's no doubt that we're looking at this year on having more people up at the front, and especially when some of these guys get healthy. And with the battle that we had to the end of this and the amount of lead changes that we had halfway through the race, it was like five or six. And these are five or six unique people that were leading the race. And we had what we'd end up with were like, you know, packs of two guys, three guys, six guys, seven guys, three and three. And it kept moving forward, moving back. And there's no doubt that, especially at a place like Phillip Island in that front straight, that drafting, or as they call slipstreaming in real countries. That didn't come out right. it plays a huge role, and especially when you got bigger guys on bikes. Although it astounded me that you could see guys like Escasa and Davis actually pull out on their own and pass guys. I mean, there were so many things in this race, and we'll probably watch it 2 or 3 more times. Maybe I'll come back next week and go, oh, I figured something out. That just had me a little bit, not necessarily confounded, but astonished. And once again, amazed at how good the quality of world supersport racing can be and how much fun it can be all the way through a race. It's one of those things where you better have your beer full and you better have used the facilities before you sat down to watch it, because you're really not going to want to go anywhere. And this was exactly one of those races like that. I feel like I just watched it again.
Well, we're not even done yet.
All right. So let's talk about the results. Let's talk about the last couple of laps a little bit, because I was trying to imbue you with an idea of the amount of the battles and the intensity of the battles that we had up front. But the bottom line was the last lap, it would pretty much was.
There was a buildup to the last lap, which was that we had Lowe's who was really putting pressure on Scassa and Salome. Those guys were swapping. Those three guys were really swapping a lot of leads for a while. I think Salome probably led the most laps in the race.
Okay.
But it was Lowe's and Scassa that really really started to crank it up at the end. But this was another one of those moments where I think Scassa was kind of getting a raw deal from the commentating, because James Whittam was getting, like, actually, it sounded like he was going to stand up in his chair and throw something at the blah 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 blah. I don't want to beat on it, but he really did. He was just like, I can't. He couldn't stop it. Jack Barnacle was just ignoring him.
actually, he was laughing at him a bit, which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Do you want to finish that out, or have you figured out where you were going?
So, Lowe's was giving it everything, and yes, his bike was slower on the straight than Scassa, and Scassa was taking advantage of that, and On the last lap, it looked like about halfway through the lap, Lowe's was looking really good, because the previous lap he made an amazing pass at the top of Looking Heights, which never really happens. You usually do it, you know, as you go into the bottom. He did a pass on the at the top, but this time Scassa was ready, and so it did look like there was no way that he was going to be able to catch him, because there was about a bike length between them.
Yep.
And then they went into the final corner. Lowe set himself up really excellent drive out, knowing that Tascasa had a more powerful, faster bike. He actually did a great job coming out of the last corner, and yet he didn't get second.
Because he didn't.
Because Parks was there. So suddenly he was there about 2 or 3 corners from the end. Looked like he was good for third. And man, he just shot out. Talk about having the perfect final line, you know?
Yeah, from at least from television, it nearly looked like a photo finish. Although you got the impression that it wasn't, because they cut to the teams as soon as they did, and you kind of got the same thing from the body English of the riders. They knew. Although it doesn't get more close than Scassa in first, Parks 9,000ths off. And Lowe's just behind him, 33,000ths off of that. So you're talking in less than half a tenth of a second. And so definitely a tight, tight finish. Not far behind was David Salome, who certainly did run a good race. And in fifth place, and the tip of the lid and a nod towards a very, very clean run, was one Robin Arms. So Arms Benjan Racing. Back mellowed with age, perhaps. Don't count him out. that is fifth. Sixth place was James Ellison. Fantastic job, considering the surgery that he'd had. Seventh place was Florian Marino, the newbie, if you will, on the Hansbury Tenkata Honda. Victorio Inazzo, and followed ninth and tenth by Lund and Delomo. Well, why are we missing some names there? And we can run back through the rest of the names later, but I guess we should get into this now because it really did. Really did have it. Yeah.
It started with a rider that, you know, I never really heard of before, which was Roccoli, being shown riding around the track with a flat. You know, he picked up, it looked like a puncture.
Yep.
So it was like, oh, bummer. You know, some rider picked up a puncture. How strange, you know? But then, Jim.
In the same lap, Was it Rockley that went out with the puncture first?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And then I believe in the same lap, we also lost somebody that was battling at the front. The fiery Frenchman himself, one Fabien Fauré. Wow. I need to coin that, don't I? And that was a big surprise because normally you don't see consecutive tire issues like this. And it really had people wondering, even then.
Already, you know, at that point, you're going, uh-oh.
Yeah, what is the deal? You know, and you're looking at six laps beforehand at that point, and you figure, okay, well, you know, this, or at least with my experience in talking to teams and getting an idea, usually your failure point is pretty similar, especially for guys that are running at the same pace. So you're looking at the guys that are running the front and running at those speeds because you don't end up with flats. Rear flats, primarily, although they are running, I believe, a new wider tire this year, and it's certainly probably a, I'm sorry, they continue to do development all the time. So, it was a bit worrisome. Anyway, we lost those two guys, and then we continued on down with six laps left to the race, and about three laps from the end, we saw Chaz Davis start to fall off of the lead pack, and he actually ran about a good two-thirds a lap before he finally fell out of camera view. And next thing you know, we saw him also with a rear flat. Now, valiant effort in rolling around, rear tire bouncing around on its rim, probably shredding chunks of rubber and whatnot. They went back in and the team dived onto the bike to put on a new rear, probably to get him out there for some points or a point of pride, if you will. And it really was one of those things because he did nearly a third of a lap trying to get back into the bits, trying not to destroy the bike nor crash it in any way or damage it. You know, for race one and one bike for each race. And they got him out again. And I guess to his credit, he did manage to come around, but only pick up 18th place. So no points. I shared an email or emailed back and forth with a crew chief last night, because I was curious, because we hadn't really seen an announcement from Pirelli about what the issue might have been. And so I was questioning him on what might have been the cause. You know, is it something that I'd heard about in the past, which was the tires spinning on the wheels, perhaps, or was it a simple delamination? And I think the answer that I got back, to paraphrase it, was, we got a shit batch of tires.
Right. Exactly.
And exactly. It was, I think it was put more politely than that, but I think I will interpret it to mean that. And so I believe what that means is that, Pirelli, you've got some homework to do. And certainly these, what usually happens with the tires that go to World Supersport is these are ostensibly street tires, although we really know they're not SC1, SC2, SC3s. These are the ones that trickle down to club racers first at the end of the season or the next season, and ultimately to you and your street bike. And so clearly they've got some homework to do and figure out what and why this happened, and I'm sure they will do it. But it was an absolute shame to see two of the guys that were gunning for the front, and Chaz could have very well had a good spot for a podium, maybe even a win. And so I hate to see that. We never like to see that. Taken out by a mechanical cause, not by the team, and not by a flying bird. So get it together.
Indeed.
All in all, fantastic. I was very, very stoked. I was shocked and surprised by some things. I was very elated at the performance of some teams. The Yamahas, I have to say, they surprised me. I did not think they were going to do as well as that going into the weekend. I did not, in my little personal life, tip them for those kind of results. So I'm very pumped, especially for Luca. You know, he's been running in World Superbikes, had some real trying time. You remember last year at Miller, dude, and he was running real strong and had some problems there as well. And, you know, he kind of picked it up towards the end of last year, but ended up on a super sport team. And what does he do? He comes out and wins.
Yeah.
Very, 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 very cool. So I just can't wait. We're looking at what, the 27th, which is a little bit over about 3 weeks away, right after the GP race, which is less than 3 weeks away. So we are full on into it.
Well, there's one little bit of news going around, which is the whole Jerez round fiasco.
Yes,
so
yes.
I just wanted to mention that. So there's, if you've read or heard about, you know, these kind of weird unfinished rumors about Jerez being dropped from the calendar. It's not for this year, but there's a possibility for 2012 because the circuit is in deep debt. The owners of the circuit are in deep debt. So they will have to figure some way out. And Spain already has, one, two, Aragon. Oh, yeah, they have four rounds now in MotoGP. So
because Aragon's been extended through 2016.
Which is great. It's fantastic. Yeah. That's right. That's the other bit of news this week. That's officially signed now. And so I could see Spain losing a round. Like Dorna wouldn't, being a Spanish company, probably, you know, is going to try to do something, but if they can find someplace to replace it, I think that, you know, bringing back, let's say, South America or something would be kind of cool. But obviously we don't lose Jerez because Jerez is one of those rounds that I think the word epic actually applies to.
True. And I think at least for the time being, consideration of Abu Dhabi is probably out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You used a great term at the beginning of what you were describing that whole thing as. You said, what was the term? Weird unfinished rumor. And the first thing that went through my mind and actually caused me to miss like the rest of that sentence was, I'm like, is there such a thing as a finished rumor? Is good, it still a...
Good point. Good point.
Is it still a rumor at that point?
Right. Well, I mean, finished as in, you know, put to bed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll buy that.
But don't worry about this year. We'll find out what happens next year. The financial, you know, if you didn't realize it, Spain got probably nailed the most. Just they have had such a good economic run that I think that it just isn't as obvious. But there's the repercussions there. The waves are going to be going for a long time.
So you know what, listeners, send us in an email where you want GP to go to. And here's my vote, Jules.
Yes.
I want Bernie Ecclestone to get hit by a bus and we go back to Turkey.
That's a great one. That's a great track. We've seen some great racing there. I mean, I don't wish the guy getting hit by a bus. That's not what I meant.
A metaphorical bus.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. That's actually, I probably would put, that's tough. Because I'd like to see them go back to South America.
But the Brazil circuit is
not the greatest, but it's Velcom, right.
Yeah.
Turkey is a fantastic track.
Who can forget some of the iconic races?
I like
to
either post on Facebook or send us an email. Let us know what you think would be a good place to go if we suddenly had a slot.
And I'll tell you what, we'll tally.
We'll make it happen.
we'll make it happen live. No, we'll tally them up and we'll give you a run. So you guys send it to us one way or another, so preferably an email to make it easier to tally up, or we'll pull it off the Facebook fan page and let us know. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
Some for you guys to do. Yeah, because you got nothing to do except for listen to us. Isn't that pathetic? And for those of you that put up with us during the off season and are willing to put up with us during the on season, welcome back to our version of marginal sanity that is MotoPod. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.